Thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos from the Mile High Show, episode 121. We're recording tonight at Marino's Mob Burgers and Ice Cream on South Cortez Street. I have not been here before. I've been in the building when it was a previous establishment. So right now, enjoying some beverages and some good company, and maybe grab a Mob Burger later on after we're done. I like the labels on them. They are the Detective, the Big Pauly. That's Matt. I think we got to get a sandwich named after Matt. What do you? I can't even say that, Les.
Consigliere.
Neither can
That's
you.
That's Robert Duvall.
Duvall, I know, but I can't say it. Anyway, right here at Marino's Mob Burger, right on the square, directly across the street from the Yavapai County Courthouse, is where we're recording. And as always, the show is brought to you by Amazon. Please use that Amazon link at milehighshow.com. A great way to support the show without any extra money coming out of your pocket. It takes you right over to your Amazon or Amazon Prime login page. And you shop away as normal. And at the end of the month, Amazon gives us a little thank you. And that's a way we can pay for this fancy gear and the sodas and the burgers. And if anybody is really, really wanting to help out the show, put in some huge orders, because I get a percentage. And whenever Matt Hinshaw shows up, it usually costs me a ton. Although I don't see a big bar here, so the tab tonight will be kind of low. One of the reasons why it's nice that we're recording here right on... Yeah, I make fun of Matt Hinshaw because he's not on mic and you can't hear him cry. We are here right next to the Courthouse Square and the courthouse in Prescott, the Yavapai County Courthouse. And it's very fitting because one of my guests today is Mr. Scott Orr, who has spent many, many hours in that very courthouse covering for local media and covering all the trials and tribulations that people face when they have to go to court. We also have his lovely wife, Rhonda, who will be talking about her podcast. Scott will be telling us all about his new venture on the microphones as well. Rhonda, we'll get into what she's doing and who she's helping out and how she's getting the word out with the Rhonda Stop Bullying
Foundation.
So remember that, Les. No yelling at me tonight, because she will put a stop to your bullying.
You're bigger than I am.
And that voice that you're hearing is no stranger to these microphones. Mr. Leslie Earl, not a serial killer, Lyman, who is a frequent guest and host and an all-round person on the mics at the Mile High Show. So let's just go around the table here, and Scott Orr, first off, what we want to do is give us where folks can reach you and your podcast, your Facebook page, all the plugging. We're going to get the plugging out of the way first.
All right. excuse me. I was just going to say that my voice sometimes fails me. When it doesn't, I do a podcast and a blog at scottcenter.net. And Scott Center Radio, Facebook, at Prescott Orr on Twitter, and email. We can't forget that. ScottOrrTB@yahoo.com.
Great, great. And we'll get into the nuts and bolts and the meat of your podcast and what you're doing now. I was going through some of the shows. You've got, what'd you say, 8 or 9 posted?
Yeah, I have 8 at this point.
8 posted up. The first one was kind of an intro, letting folks know about you and what you've been doing. I wasn't aware that you were no longer at the paper full time. The Prescott Daily Courier is where we know each other from mostly.
Right.
So we'll get into that, and I'm sure most of the folks listening know you by your association from the paper, at least in this area. I'm sure that's the bulk of the familiarity, that people know your face and your name and your writing. So
yeah, I think that's fair. I've been here for 6 years now, yeah. So that's probably where they've heard of me.
And I want to get into your history, your television work, and your high flying work that you've done in the past, Rhonda.
Hello.
You guys have been, you're newlyweds still, right?
Yes, 2 years.
2 years. It's been 2 years already.
Yes, right. It's been 2 years.
Now, my wife at 2 years said it felt like 20. And then once we hit 20, she just stopped answering and she just shakes her head when I ask her. We're hitting up on 22 years.
22?
22 years
20
this
more
April.
Years?
Yeah.
Hey. I don't know if she didn't put she hasn't killed me for that long.
I was pretty convinced that if you probably would have stuck at the paper, at some point you'd be covering the story of my wife ending that connection. Because there have been times she has wanted to... She's not interested in ending the marriage, per se. It's
just ending
me. But trust me, I have given her more than enough reason to do so. Just kidding, of course. I can say anything I want about her, because not only didn't she ever read anything I put in print, she never has listened to an episode of this podcast.
Challenge accepted.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, she goes, I hear you enough. What do I want to hear you coming through my headphones for? All right, I got off track there, Rhonda.
That's okay.
After 2 years, now, is this...
Yes, I am Scott's lovely wife.
Yes. Yeah. What's that saying about marrying out of your league?
Yeah,
I think
we all
have.
Yeah, I definitely married up.
Rhonda, what was home base for you before? Have you been in Prescott and Yavapai County for a long time? Or
4 years.
Four years. So not too long.
I lived in L.A. and New York City for most of my adult life.
So went from one metropolis to another.
Yes, this
the
is
big
just
city
like
of
New York
Prescott.
City. I can walk downtown.
It's just like New York City, except smaller.
And cleaner.
Yeah.
Although this nicer. Menu might remind you a little bit about back home with the gangster motif.
Oh, yeah.
Now, your main focus right now, at least in my eyes, in the public eyes, is with the...
Rhonda, Stop Bullying.
And what...
And also, I'm a columnist, Dear Rhonda and Dr. Sherry.
Now, that's printed both locally as well as
Arizona
statewide
Republic.
At the Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And you are also on local media pretty regular through what we were talking about off air, so you can go back.
Sandy and Friends and KQ&A and quite a few different stations.
Very nice.
Here, yeah.
And what was give us a little bit about the foundation. What's the goal of it? How'd you get it started?
Well, this is my second nonprofit. I had one about 22 years ago, Stop Child Abuse Theatrical Productions. And
were you like seven?
Yeah.
When you started that?
No, you got the numbers right. Thank you.
So you jumped on the age. I was going to jump on the fact that it's got the longest name of any nonprofit ever.
Hey, I took off the four girls because we're for boys now, too. Yeah. And seniors, actually. So we have really spread out just to get to, you know.
And how did that start? How did your interest with the nonprofit world start to begin with?
Actually, it started in my childhood. I went through abuse myself as a child. And from that, I went into therapy for 4 years because of it. And I decided that, you know, I was going to do something about it. And I had been involved with theater and directed and did a lot of different things. And I decided to produce theater in L.A. to create funds and awareness for stopping child abuse. But I was a single mom, and so once he started school, I said, I'm going to put this off until he's grown. So now he's grown, and I started this 3 years ago. We've been an official 501c3 for 3 years. And I looked around to see what people were doing about bullying, and it's such a prevalent problem now in the world of abuse. Abuse, bullying, same thing, maltreatment.
Yeah.
And I all I saw was be nice, you know, be nice. It was kind of T-shirt slogan-ish, you know, that's the answer to bullying. And I said, this is not going to work. And so I developed my own formula, and we call it Triangle of Triumph, victim to survivor to leader.
And where can folks get more information? Give a website, social media, what do you have?
RhondaStopBullying.org website, Facebook page, Rhonda Orr. And also my email, Rhonda@RhondaStopBullying and
.org.
With one S. And telephone number 928-515-9996.
And we'll put links for all of these and Les's Facebook page, because he still hasn't gotten Twitter, Instagram, or a website, but we'll continue to use that.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah, I wish I didn't have it. So much.
You either love it or you hate it.
Well, we'll have links to all those so we can get the word out there. But now, in your experience with your Rhonda, with your research into bullying and
yes.
the persistent problem, is it a matter that it's getting worse, or that because of social media and communication in general, we're just hearing more about bullying instances? Or is it a combo of both of those?
Well, I think it's actually the same. I wouldn't say that it's getting worse. I think people are more aware of it, but they haven't found the answer. They haven't found something meaty to chew on to make a difference. And we actually have a campaign, Why Not Prescott, to try and end bullying starting right here, and using our program, our Triangle of Triumph, using something that requires an entire program to go through and make a difference so that someone understands what it means to be a victim, someone understands what it is to be a survivor, that you have to learn to define yourself, how you do that. Big program. The nuts and bolts is right there.
Now, is it ever too soon to start getting kids involved?
No. Kids need to start in preschool. And I'm not kidding. I have taught kids in preschool because they need to learn communication skills. They don't know how to communicate. They know how to text, and they know how to say JK. And that's it. And, you know, they haven't learned all the things like body language and tone of voice and things that are real communication.
The addiction to electronic devices.
Yeah.
Matt, put your phone down. But no, a lot of that is. It's the face-to-face, the one-on-one communication has... And I'm as guilty of it as most.
As I am.
Yeah. So in our house, we've got a 7-year-old at home. We were talking off mic, or probably on mic. I don't remember when I hit the button. 22 years. We were married 15 years before my wife got pregnant. So it was kind of late in life. So I'm a grandpa raising a kid, it feels like, anyway. And it's tough in our house, yet when I start looking around at friends of ours or classmates of his when I go pick him up at school and that, some of these parents who are in their early and mid-20s who are just buried into that phone constantly. So we've made a conscious effort to kind of lock away. We stack our phones at mealtime. We try not to get too involved
in it. I'm going to give you an award because how many times do you go out to eat and the whole table of a family? I mean, isn't that the point, to go out so you can communicate? And instead of communicating, everyone's on their phone, maybe even texting their sister next door.
Right next to them at the table.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just a huge problem. Communicating with each other, even getting to know each other. I mean, sit down and have dinner once in a while together. Yeah. It's a big problem. And it all boils down to learn how to communicate with one another.
Yeah, my schedule's much more fluid than my wife's, and she starts early in the morning. She works over at the town of Chino. So she's up and gone typically while we're getting up. And so that breakfast time, getting him ready for school, having breakfast, is my one-on-one time with Anthony. And as we're both getting older, just appreciating that more and more and more, because the first few years of his life when I was with PNI and with the review, I was all over working a couple of jobs and there all the time. It was like he was born and then he was three, and I was like, what happened? Where did that go? So we've made some adjustments on it, and I tell you, I am appreciating that more and more every day, that hour or so we get every morning over breakfast just to sit and talk or to read together, things like that. It's a lot of fun.
That's fantastic, and because it's really a statistic that if you spend 20 minutes a day eye-to-eye without any other social media or anything else that you're doing, even like dishes or anything like that, if you have that time with your child each day, you're going to have a much better chance of communicating with them when they're a teenager.
Yeah. I want to get it all crammed in before he hates me.
Yeah.
Because he will.
Good idea. Yeah. You're doing really well.
And before he gets to where he knows everything and you don't know anything.
No, well, we're pretty much past that already. He's much, much smarter, much more handsome, and much better dressed than I am already.
Certainly a better photographer.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, that's one thing my wife does not like. He has a real passion for photography. I've got an old SLR that he carries around with him, and she goes, take that away from him now. It's such a bad influence.
Well, you know, it's a tough career. If you want to start him that early, you're taking responsibility.
Well, it's my fault. He actually took, I was doing a show, and he took a really good pic, several really good pictures,
and
I gave him some money.
For shooting.
I was going to say that.
Now, I got the chance to kind of sit and watch one of your seminars. It's been maybe a year and a half.
Academy.
It's been a while, yeah, over at the Haciampa.
Yes.
And you had a great group of, well, mixed age, but some very young girls from the community. And Scott, you were over there taking care of, you know, some of the promotion stuff, putting your communication and your mass comm skills to use there.
Well, you know, I usually say that I like to back her up because I don't want to be in the spotlight, but I'll help her be in the spotlight as much as she'll let me.
Now, how often do you do those type of seminars and that kind of community outreach?
Well, we do a few of the all-day seminars, but believe it or not, it's very hard to be able to find kids that have a whole entire day that they can devote to that and go through the graduation fashion show that we do at the end and receive the certificate of achievement. And so it's a whole day, half a night type thing. And so we do kind of mini leadership academies now, too. And do those, you know, shorter spots around with school kid groups. I go into the juvenile detention school, and I go there quite often. So I do a mini leadership academy over there with them.
Now, I was there taking some pictures and stuff, and I absorbed a little bit of it. It seemed like a big focus was on building confidence in these kids. Is that a strong focus of what you're doing, or did I just misread?
No. No, we hope that they develop confidence. It's one of our five C's: civility, confidence, courage, creativity, and strong carriage. Now, they don't even know what the word carriage means. They're like, what, little buggy? You know? And I'm presentation skills. So standing up tall, being able to look at a bully, that's the number one line of defense, is to be able to learn how to stand tall and have eye contact. And so many kids don't have those types of skills. They don't learn them anymore, and they're not utilizing those types of skills when they're communicating because they're all on a social media device.
Well, great. And again, where can folks reach you? I'm assuming social media links and stuff are on your website.
Yes.
What's the website? Give that again.
RondaStopBullying.org with one S.
Great. Now, let's shift gears a little bit to the main focus of why we're here. I wanted to, one, see Scott again. I haven't bumped into you in quite a while. So I was glad to see some posts that you've been putting up on social media about your new podcast and about what you're doing. But let's drop back several years. Let's go back. Where did you grow up? Where are your roots?
Well,
you grown up?
Well, we're not there yet. No, I used to tell people that I'm from Phoenix. And then I did an interview with the newspaper once, and my parents saw that, and they said, "You're not from Phoenix. You were born in Chicago." Well, we moved when I was 10. So I say I'm from Phoenix because I spent what you call the formative years.
School time, high school in Phoenix?
Yeah. Yeah. But since I've been with Rhonda, she's asked a lot about my Chicago background, and I'm remembering a lot of things that probably I should consider when somebody asks me that question. So, Matt, I'm from Chicago.
Another mob hangout. Great. Yeah. Is that why you picked this place?
Yeah.
Get back to your roots?
It felt just like home.
Now, growing up was... What did you want to do? When did the journalism bug bite you?
Ooh, that's a good one. Well, I mean, it all started way back in the 70s when we moved to Phoenix. I turned on the news and saw this helicopter pilot reporter who was saving lives. And I said, wow, I got to watch this guy. So I watched the news so I could see him. In the process, I got interested in the news.
Who was that? Do you remember?
That was Jerry Foster.
Jerry Foster.
Who is a good friend to this day.
Oh, nice. I was just going to ask that. Did that get into the personal aspect? It sounds like
it did. Well, yeah. He was up here. He lives down in Sun City now. He was up here last year for a book signing. He wrote an autobiography. And he did a presentation at Embry-Riddle. Which, you know, I thought was fun, but he was actually honored because he said it was the only time he'd been asked to speak at a college. So,
wow.
Yeah, so he was very honored.
So how old were you when you saw this, when you saw this pilot?
Well, like 12 years old.
So very young.
Yeah.
Nice. Always wanting to do, was TV what you wanted to do? Was that...
Yeah. I did TV for almost 30 years.
What aspects?
Well, I used to say, and I guess this is true, I've done every job in a TV newsroom that you can do. I mean, all the way from running the teleprompter, studio camera, I did some reporting, news photography, you name it. So, I mean, it was a good career for many years.
What was the most, most fun? What was the one what aspect of it, was there any specific aspect that felt like you weren't going to work? You were actually just going to have fun?
Oh, yeah, shooting.
Yeah?
Shooting TV news was just a load of fun because, you know, as you know from having been a photographer, you don't make a whole lot of money, but
yeah,
you get to go places and do things that other people don't get to do.
For me, whenever I got to strictly go out and do photography, that was the fun.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like work. If I had to go and either write a story, do an interview, or do a combo of, you know, shooting pictures and writing, that was work. That was, for me, like pulling teeth. It wasn't what I enjoyed doing. But in order to do what I liked, I had to do, you know, I had to put pen to paper. And actually, when I started, it was actually pen to paper, pre-computers. But it wasn't what I really enjoyed doing. I liked shooting the pictures, and more, it got to the writing aspect, especially when I was with WNI and PNI. It was primarily writing, and it was. I really relish the time I can go behind the camera as opposed to sitting there writing. And one of the things I like about doing this, I didn't mind the interview process.
It was having to put it together.
Yeah, so here I get to do the fun part without having to write anything
right.
about it.
Yeah.
So I've stumbled into something that's actually kind of fun to do. I'm thinking he's either going to be offended at this or not. I'm thinking we're pretty close to the same age, I think. I've said that to people, and they go, oh, no, you're way older than me.
Well, I'm 35. So.
35, then you have not lived a good life, I will tell you.
I didn't know that. I'm not a cradle robber.
I'm guessing 51.
Perfect.
Isn't 51? Yes, okay, I'll be 51 this year.
I just turned 51 5 days ago.
Happy birthday.
Congrats on not dying.
Yeah.
You know, you get older, but it beats the alternative.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the older you get, the tougher it is to not die. You know what I mean? Just
yeah.
My first gig for pay, I was doing photo studio work and stuff, but my first mass comm newspaper job was a part-time gig in 82, I think. When did you start up? I bypassed college. I went through college a couple of times. I just didn't get any on me. When did you start?
He drove through. Yeah. He drove past it. He didn't get, drove right through college.
I took a class and ended up teaching it as a student teacher after the second semester and never went back to take to finish up. Never got my degree, but went back and forth a couple of times over the decades with the goal of getting a degree, and it just never worked out.
Well, I went over to the University of Arizona in Tucson in 84, and as soon as I got in there, I learned that, and I think this has changed, but I learned that they had a real TV station that did nightly newscasts.
At the university?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
nice.
They allowed students to do the tech jobs.
Down in the valley or up in Flagstaff?
In Tucson.
Oh, in Tucson. Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So, I mean, I was able to do real TV jobs as a student, cool. And that's where I realized that I would be doing it for quite some time.
84 high school graduate?
Yep.
And then straight on into college. Yep. We're same year. I graduated in 84 as well.
Yeah.
You guys are so young. Oh, my God.
Now, over the decades, now I know I'm familiar with a few of the stories that you worked on up this way, but going back in your journalism career, what are some of the bigger stories that you've covered?
Well, I mean, of course, there are the political ones. I did the Democratic National Convention in Denver with Obama, and actually, I covered Clinton and Gore, but mostly what I remember are the everyday stories. There were ones I like to tell about people who had bad things happen to them, but you could see they were still in there fighting. They still had their faith. And I remember that there was a time when I did an interview with an older woman whose son had been killed, and she was nice enough to talk to us on camera, which I don't know if I could have done myself.
Yeah, yeah.
But when we were done, I just sat down on the floor next to her chair, and I said, you know, I'm really sorry that this happened, and she started to cry, and I said, but you still have your faith, right? She looked at me, and I said, you still believe in Jesus, right? She said, yes, I do. He's going to save us. And I said, that's right. And, of course, the reporter I was working with looked at me like I was nuts.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you don't really get that involved in people's lives. But I just felt like she needed to hear it from someone.
Yeah. That's one of the toughest aspects of the journalism field is inserting yourself, as you have to do to cover various things, and getting oftentimes the brunt of people's, you know, you're a lot of times it's, you know, you're seeing them at their worst day when something bad happens, whether it be an accident or a fire or natural disaster. And documenting that stuff, especially behind the camera, like it sounds like you spent a lot of your time, and I spent a lot of mine doing the same, to record the emotion, to capture the feeling of whatever that event happens to be, and at the same time, walking that fine line between telling the story and exploiting a situation. And that can be a really tough one to do. Over the years, I've covered a lot of major news stuff from my time in California, and a few out here, you know, comes to mind is the Arnell tragedy.
Yeah.
And how did you balance that when you had to, you know, roll up on an accident, a house fire or a shooting, anything of that nature, to capture the story, to record the emotion, tell the story, and at the same time allow the folks the respect they need? Were there any tricks you did or anything that you did to your in your own mind to keep that balance?
Well, you have to compartmentalize. I mean, in some ways it's like being a cop or a firefighter. If you let it get to you internally, it'll eat you up. I mean, when I first ran into Rhonda, I told her what I did, and she said, oh, I heard about whatever. That was just awful. And I said, yeah, I guess. But, yeah. You know, I can't internalize that stuff.
Yeah.
But I remember that there was a day I was at a homicide scene with several other camera crews, and we were all set up waiting for the police to come make a statement. The guy walks up, and he says, you effing vultures, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
I looked at him and I said, I'm doing my job, sir. What are you doing here? And he got mad and stomped off.
Yeah.
But I also remember a different homicide scene. And this one made a real impact because I was just standing out in front of the house and I looked up at the sky. And it was a bright blue day. And it was fall and there were some leaves on the ground. The wind blew a few of them by, and I realized it's a beautiful day out here. And in that house, somebody who was killed.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's accurate or not, but I realized at that point that sometimes on the most beautiful days, the worst things happen. You know, in the movies, it's always during a thunderstorm.
Yeah, it's the set director setting it up. The yeah. mood music and that, but more often than not, it's something really ugly happened, and for the most part, unless you're right there, you don't know about it. You're oblivious to it as a neighbor or as the guy driving down the street, but there's a lot of ugliness out there.
That's true.
That's not all there is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no.
That's not absolutely. All there is. That's the whole trick.
Yeah.
That's well, not all
that's
there is.
That's true.
Right?
I mean, you know? If I were to have covered all that on a steady diet of homicides and fires and crashes, I'd probably be dead myself by now.
I found this it's very similar. Some of the, you know, I've photographed and covered some big national stuff and conventions in San Francisco, political stuff and visiting dignitaries and that. And while those were fun to do, it's always interesting to kind of be behind the scenes and be able to see how things work and, you know, get up close and personal a lot of times. The stories that I always enjoyed doing, the photographs I liked doing were, you know, I had a lot more fun shooting a Little League game and seeing the parents cheering and the little kid crying after scraping a knee than being one of 50... You know, in the dugout at a major league game, because it's everybody's getting the exact same shot. It's, you know, you're shooting the action. You're penned in a little corral for the most part. Doing the smaller, doing the more personal stuff always generated the best images for me. It was always more interesting to shoot that way.
Well, I'll agree with that. You know, one of the things that is true for news photography, whether it's stills or video, is if your stories aren't touching enough people, you're shooting them from too far away.
Yeah.
You need to get up close. And they don't, whoever invented that phrase, I can't remember who it is now, but they weren't talking about a zoom lens.
Yeah.
They were talking about using your feet and getting right up on top of people.
Yeah.
So you can see the emotion in their eyes.
A good friend of mine, Lloyd Francis Jr., who was a news photographer in the San Francisco Bay Area, went overseas, and he was kind of my mentor when I was younger, when I was a teenager, teaching me kind of the business. And he always said, he'd pull out pictures and look. He goes, okay, what do you notice about these? You know, pick the one you like. What grabbed you about it? And I didn't even know it at the time, but as he would walk me through it, it typically came to look at the eyes.
Yeah.
Look at the eyes. It could be nothing. You know, if you're doing a feature on, you know, the person working behind the counter here at Mob Burgers, is it just a shot of somebody standing behind the counter, or are you getting in close enough, or are you capturing what's in that person's eyes, getting a little emotion? It makes it more personal that way. And it always went back to that. He would go, okay, look at the eyes, look at the eyes. So when you're shooting, try and do that. And I'm sorry, you were about to get in there, Rhonda, go ahead.
I just have to say this, because what came to my mind was the fact that he tries to do that. But one time we were dating, and he's surrounded by a SWAT team. and he was really getting in there, and he was not paying attention to where he was and what line of fire he was in. And they were like, Scott, well, could you move back?
It's true. I got there a little earlier than some of the officers, so I sat down across the street by a mailbox with a long lens.
Yeah.
Finally, one of the sergeants came up and he said, Scott, can you come back here and talk to me? So I did, and he said, look, can you see that window? Yeah. If you can see that window, he can see you.
Yeah.
How about if you stay here behind my vehicle?
me and my good buddy, Bobby Garcia, we did a lot of shooting together in the Bay Area. And one night we were out hitting the bars. And we always had our scanners plugged in our ears.
Yep.
Back then, that's how, you know, we were ambulance chasers, if nothing else. And we start hearing the calls coming through. There's a house fire a couple of blocks from where we were. So we jump in his car and fly over there. And this house is completely, fully engulfed. And it was in a tract home. You know, it wasn't big yards like you get here. This was a Oakland suburb and, you know, houses on top of houses. Fully engulfed. Fire trucks are pulling in right behind us, and they're going in and going around the back of the house, rolling out their hooking ladders and stuff, and then the garage door swings open, and nobody was home at the home, you know, at the house, but one of the firemen had gone in. They opened up the garage door because that's how they were going to come in, and I guess it started in the kitchen, whatever, it was attached. Well, I decided I was going to follow them in. And they're very involved in what they're doing.
This was a while ago.
This
obviously.
Was in 84, 85.
Yeah, you could sort of get away with it back then.
That, and we were there so quick. I mean, there was neighbors hosing it down, you know, with their garden hoses and things. So they're worried about what they're doing. They didn't pay attention to me. So I went in the garage, and the best shot I got that day was standing in the garage looking out with the fire trucks and a fireman running in yelling at me, what am I doing in here? As I'm shooting pictures, got three or four frames, switched lenses, and because we were preoccupied before when we heard the call sitting at a bar, as I switched my lens, I put my finger through the shutter of my camera. It's old film day. My old Nikon FM2.
Yep.
And I got maybe a half a dozen shots, including that one of the firemen yelling at me. And every shot after that had shutter leaves going through it. This is, you know, pre-digital, obviously. So you can't look on the back of the camera as you're shooting to see what you're getting. I didn't see it until five rolls later. I'm in the darkroom souping the film, and I'm going, what happened? So I had a few frames in the beginning. But, yeah, there was you don't often think, or at least back then, as a much, much, much younger man, not think about it. Now, I obviously don't have the energy or the desire to put myself in harm's way, but back then it was easy to get caught up in the adrenaline rush of covering a story.
Well, I'm reminded of a story that I went on. It was just a run-of-the-mill traffic accident in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Get there with the reporter. We beat the fire engines, we beat the police, we beat the EMS guys, and we looked at each other and said, what do we do? I don't have any first aid gear.
Yeah.
Let's just duck down. And just then we heard a fire engine. Yeah. But, I mean, we were like, well, I mean, we...
am I going to make it worse?
Yeah, you know, that was a weird feeling to be there a little too early.
Yeah, we got in 89 with the Loma Prieta earthquake, if you remember the Bay Bridge series, the Giants and A's, I was a stringer for a paper out there, so did not get credentialed for the World Series, obviously, because, you know, everybody from around the world was coming. And I'm loading up my gear at my shop, and I feel a little quake. And I was out, you know, 30 miles outside of Oakland. And right off the bat, kind of knew it wasn't the normal quakes that we would feel, you know, on an ongoing basis. Flicked on the radio, start hearing everything, and jumped in my car and shot over to the Cypress structure because the reports were that it had fallen. And I pulled in just before the first fire trucks.
Ugh.
And that was 5-something in the afternoon, and I left there at like 4 a.m. But it was, we were out there, I was out there the whole time, and all the other photographers were stuck at the World Series on the other side of the bay.
So they had nothing.
Well, they started floating in later. Yeah,
eventually they filtered out.
Got the only circulated shot of the last surviving person pulled out of the structure. It ran. That was a big thing for. It ran Washington Post, Newsweek picked it up, a couple other outlets. But it was again exciting because you're in that rush. And then as we're running the film, you know, in the early mornings, it started hitting like, wow, there's people in there still. But it didn't click while you're there because you're like doing this and doing that and watching, and then the news crew started rolling in, and the fire trucks and the city buses that they were using as temporary morgues as they were pulling people out. But you don't, it's not processing until much, much later. No noise, it's quiet in the dark room, and you're printing and going, ooh, yeah.
I want to talk about that, but first I've yeah, I'm,
there's no structure
I'm
here.
Taking,
jump in it.
Taking charge of the show
no,
because
ahead.
I want to talk.
Somebody
about
has
that.
To.
Well, I just wanted to point out that I had a front page photo in the San Francisco Chronicle in '89.
Oh, nice!
I was staying at a hotel near the Tenderloin District.
I know it well.
You know, it was not as bad as you might be led to believe. But there was a fire across the street in a hotel, and on the third floor, there was a woman screaming because she had kids and they couldn't get down the fire escape. Now, first of all, what I always point out here is that I learned that day, people who are screaming in terror do not sound like the people who scream in movies.
Yeah.
It sounded like an animal.
Yes.
She was just in abject terror. And I'm looking down the street watching the ladder truck weaving its way through traffic.
Yep.
They put the ladder up. The firefighter ran up it. And then he said, throw me your kids. So I have a shot of her holding the kids'
hand. You took that one? I remember that picture.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. I remember that picture. It's like, as a matter of fact, you can find that picture on the internet still. You know, I see it pop up on like.
You getting royalties still? What's going on here?
Yeah. No, they paid me in film. It was so, you know, after I turned in the photo, and by the way, she's holding the kid's hands and she's throwing the feet to the firefighter. What was it? KGO, I believe, was the ABC station.
Yep, KGO.
Their union crew came out and took me up on the roof. And the photographer said, okay, here's the deal. I can't ask you questions because I'm not allowed to interview you. But if my sound man here holds a mic and you talk, I can use them.
The politics of journalism.
So I did. I just gave him sound bites because I knew what I would want.
Yeah.
But that was a weird little...
That was one of my favorite neighborhoods in San Francisco.
That is the most awkward thing to look at, too, because it doesn't look like she's throwing them. It almost, you know what I mean? It's like, it looks really awkward. I can't, like you look at it and you're like, well, that's not going to work. You know, that's not going to work. You know, and she's going to go with the kid, you know?
I will admit that while I was shooting that, I had cold chills, which I don't usually have. What I wanted to talk about briefly was the media reaction to the Granite Mountain hotshot death. I mean, the worldwide media was here in Prescott.
Yeah.
And a couple days I went over to the fence at Station 7 and I watched it grow from a couple shirts to
what
memorial.
It became,
I knew something was up when the TV truck started setting up and then put up tents.
Yeah.
You know, when the police blocked the road so that they could do that. The problem is they were so intrusive.
Yeah.
And I realized that I used to be that intrusive. And I felt so bad because I never recognized how much I was probably hurting.
Yeah.
Hurting some of these people, you know. But now that I'm in print, of course, I can be a snob about
in a smaller market, because that was one of the things I talk with Dwight Devlin fairly regularly and spent a lot of time talking with him during that few weeks following the Yarnell fire. And the feelings, because there was a lot of resentment to press, especially the outside press during that time frame. I remember Matt Hinshaw and I were shooting side by side at the Embry-Riddle thing the second day, I think, the second or third day right after when they had the big service there, and it was flooded with media. And there was a point where a lot of iconic images were recorded there by all of us. At one point when a lot of the firefighters were embracing near the podium, and we're shooting, and there was a lot of folks hollering from the seats, similar to what you were saying, you know, you vultures, leave them alone, get them away. And we had several of the local officials pull us aside, and he goes, I want you to know that wasn't meant to you. You guys know these guys. These are guys you photographed playing Little League. And at picnics and at, you know, the community events that firefighters are at working with kids. He goes, I want you to know that was not directed at you guys. And they made a point to let us know that. He goes, that's for those network guys. That's from the guys that are just here, and in 3 days they're going to be gone.
Yeah.
And that felt really good to hear. And we had more conversations like that as the days and as the weeks went on from family members. There was Chino had a pretty big, it was right around July 4th. And the local officials were out to honor and ringing the bell and reading the names and things. And it was tough because I know the officials. I worked side by side with Mayor Marley and council members and some county folks. And what really sticks out is Danny and Michelle Parker, Wade's parents, who I've known. I photographed Wade as a young kid playing Little League in high school ball. And I'm standing there with my camera gear, and there's some AP guys and some folks from Phoenix News and that. They're all there. And I felt dirty. I felt like it. So I went, I ditched my stuff. I kind of set it to the side, and I got some shots that I needed and then ditched it. And Danny walked over. Danny and Michelle both walked over after, and they go, no, pick up your stuff. Go ahead. You can shoot. He goes, I don't want to talk to those guys. And just that level of appreciation, knowing that we weren't going to exploit their story. We wanted to document it. We wanted to let the world know what they were going through. And at the same time, at no point did I stick my recorder in their face and go, how are you feeling? I knew how they were feeling. I was feeling very similar thoughts. And that wasn't the feeling, that wasn't the attitude of a lot of the national press. Now, I'm not saying everybody was a pain in the butt, but, you know, they were there to do a job.
For the most part, they were, because they were like bulls in the china shop.
Well, it's just, you know, when the national spotlight gets turned. I grew up close to D.C., so I would see this, you know, when there would be the fireworks or whatever, the national media would show up. And it's a whole nother level. It's not some people taking some pictures. There's trucks and tents and armies of people, and, like, people competing to get, you know, like, what's that line? What's that line from that Don Henley song? You know, is the head dead yet? You know, they're trying to get, you know, like, you know, they're trying to get that if it bleeds, it leads thing, and it's completely cold blooded. But it's different Matt, you knew these guys,
yeah,
you know, and
so
you know,
it's not.
You know, well, and, but you still feel it. You still feel like somehow it's your fault, man, brother. I'm here to tell you, it's not. It's the business. It's If you want to blame anybody, like, blame the American hunger, you know, the world hunger for, you know, more news so they can sell advertising.
Yeah. We want it, and we want it now.
Yeah, you know,
I was over at Prescott High School reporting for the Courier on that event, and there were, gosh, I don't have any idea how many media outlets, but
all of them.
Yeah. You know? How many reporters are there? All of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, In doing that, I realized that these people were never going to feel the same way I did, because I knew some of the guys had been killed. And just like every other event for the 2 weeks or so, I teared up.
Yeah.
And somebody from BBC America looked over at me like, what's the matter with you? You know, and I just looked away.
Yeah.
But, you know, because I had a press badge, but they couldn't see where I worked.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So they had no idea that I was from here.
I think, and again, this living in a smaller market like we do now, maybe I'm looking at it through, you know, not reality based, but I think the coverage gets much better that way because everybody can see the bigger picture and see the tragedy. And that's what the national media was focusing on. I think our goal as local journalists was to, okay, there's the big picture. Now I want to sit and talk with so-and-so's teacher. What was he like in English class in seventh grade? What kind of character was this, him or her? You know, how is the family going to recover from this? What steps? What are you taking away from this to better yourself? To, you know, look kind of, it might be sound corny, but like the silver lining to this.
Well, yeah.
How are you going to do that? Everybody can see the tragedy. Let's see the impact and the good that can come from it, whether it be changing of regulations or changing of benefits, things like that.
Well, maybe,
and
maybe
that kind of got forgotten.
You know, well, like, no, that, it really is too soon. Yeah. I mean, you need to wait. We're just now able to talk about this with some objectivity.
Well, and
after like, what? Well, how long has it been?
Three years.
Okay. So the thing is that like, not like that's like, well, you need to grieve and then you need to talk.
Well,
about
and that's
it.
Part of the point, yeah, because they were only here until the next story broke.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This is our home. Yeah. This is where we can get into that longer form.
Well, you know, I moved here in March, the end of March before the Yarnell fire. And from an outsider's point of view, it was my deciding reason that I'm here.
Yeah.
Because I saw the community. I was here for all of the functions, and I said, these people are really connected, and they're very loving, and they're very kind, and they're very good to each other, and that's why I'm going to stay here for the rest of my life. You know, that really was the event that cemented before I met Scott.
I was going to say, so it had nothing to do with Scott.
It had nothing to do with Scott.
I just wanted to clarify that.
Well, so now you know, Scott.
You're the B-roll.
You were the bonus. You were the bonus. So
since we're there now and we are talking about journalism and Rhonda, it's time for Rhonda to tell the story of how we met.
Okay, I walked into the paper. And I wanted to get coverage for our Leadership Academy. It was our first one for our nonprofit and first time since we became a 501c3. And I walked in, and there was another editor there at the time. And she introduced me to Scott. And Scott, coincidentally, which I don't believe in coincidences, but he was supposed to be interviewing someone else on bullying. And so
that person had dumped out on me, and I was saying, I don't have a story. And there she was.
And so I saw him. And I was at a stage in my life where I am not dating anymore. I am never getting remarried. I don't even want to look at a guy and think, you know, anything. So out he walks. And he interviewed me for a little bit longer than necessary.
Well, come on. It was only 90 minutes.
Okay, yeah. let's talk about ethics here. Hitting on your subject, I think, is a no-no.
Well, and then I knew I was in trouble because I was, like, fumbling around trying to find my business card, you know, and here's this. And then he shows up at the Leadership Academy, like, early in the morning.
Well,
and then
I had
he's
to
there.
Get a story about it, right?
He's there, like, all day.
I had and then to get the complete story of it.
And then the kids are getting ready for their fashion show at night, and he's there. And, you know, and
I went home, wrote the story, and went back.
And so I'm thinking, wow, we're really getting a lot of publicity.
That's
here.
The in-depth coverage of the Daily Courier
small
office.
Town, right?
That's right.
And so the ceiling thing was very cute but very corny. We thought no one was watching
Scott,
us.
Scott, corny?
But my
ceiling?
Yeah.
Sealed the deal.
Okay.
It's very corny, but it's kind of interesting because we thought no one was watching us, but my son and a few friends, they were all over in this corner watching this all happen.
Everybody was milling around, talking, you know.
It was all over.
Figured, nobody's looking at us.
And he grabs my hand and he goes, as he's talking to me for a few minutes, and I'm thinking, he's got my hand still. And he goes, I know I should let go of your hand, but I can't. And I went, oh, my gosh.
Now, that could have gone either way. That could have resulted in a restraining order or a ring.
Or multiple contusions. You know?
Well, I had a feeling that the line would work, but it wasn't really a line, which is why it's so corny.
Now, that story...
It's not corny at all.
That story went one direction. Now, knowing that Scott covered the crime beat for so long, it could have gone a whole nother way. It could have started with, okay, so I got arrested... Yeah. And this guy showed up to cover my trial. So I'm glad it was this way.
Yeah, it was not that.
Yeah. Well, so your time, you were with the Courier for 6 years, you said?
Yeah, I'm still doing some freelancing from home.
And doing, what brought you here? Was it just a switch from television to print?
Well, actually, it was because my parents live in Chino, and it seemed like it was getting to be the time that I should probably be available to them.
Nice.
And of course, now they've said, all right, that's it. You're not allowed to move ever again.
Oh, I thought they were saying that. That's why you moved to Prescott.
Yeah,
you had to get, okay, this is too close. Get out of town.
Yeah. See, that's what happens to me.
So yeah.
People ask you to leave. You
know? They're like, it's nice. Could you come back next year? It'd be great.
So. Well, my little story on that is that I was not apparently the Courier's first choice for this job. They had hired someone else who worked for one day and then quit. So when I showed up...
I will not comment on that.
So they called me back and they said, hey, do you still want the job? And I said, of course, I'll be there in 2 weeks. Oh, that's fantastic! You know, well, I mean, to me, that's how it was done. So I get here, and one of the reporters is taking me around, and she says, so, listen, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but the other person they hired quit after one day, and you were their second choice. And I said, yeah, that's all right.
And don't talk to Matt Santos.
No, that came much later.
Yeah, that did come later.
No, they were doing it then. They were doing it then.
They were preparing.
No, I like to tell people, and I only say it half joking, like we had said, photography to me, especially news photography, photojournalism is my number one favorite thing to do. It's almost like not working. And I like to tell people I made the mistake of telling the editor that this is so much fun, I'd do it for free, and they took
me
up on it.
They took me up on it, yep. Yeah.
Now, so... We'll touch on it, and I encourage people to go to scottcenter.net. Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes is where they can get your podcast.
Yep.
Go to that first episode, and again, I don't want to dwell a whole lot on it.
No, we can dwell. I don't have a problem with that.
It goes into depth about some of the changes that you've been going through in your personal life with your health and things. Did that play a part in you leaving the broadcast journalism to print as well?
It didn't, because I was no longer on camera.
Gotcha.
I was producing, which translates into writing for the news, and so I still could have done that. But it did translate into me leaving the Courier full-time.
Gotcha. And that situation being your Parkinson's.
Yeah, we should probably explain what it is we're talking about here.
Well, no, I want people to go to the podcast and listen to that first episode, because
that
gave a really good history of you and what you're doing. And some of the things that you've gone through, again, like you were telling the story about... I think you were at the grocery store, and the clerk brings up, oh, do you have what Michael J. Fox had? And you're like, well, I just want to ring up my groceries and go home.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to focus too much on that, because your story is interesting with that not even entering the picture. But.
Well, it's why I'm doing a podcast with this voice. I mean, I had long and discouraging discussions where Rhonda worked to convince me that it would be all right, you know, to have this voice. but it's a result of the Parkinson's surgery. And I actually played for her one day a track of me doing a promo for a newscast. And she was in the middle of something else, and she said, "Hey, that's pretty good. Who was that?" That was me before this.
Yeah.
So I was hesitant to do this, but from what I understand, people find the stories interesting.
What I find most encouraging about podcasting in general, it harkens back to the old days of pirate radio.
Yeah.
You know, getting a transmitter and blasting out whatever you wanted to do. And we're recording, like we said, here at what is it? I better give them another plug. Marino's Mob. I was just calling it Mob Burgers, but it's Marino's Mob Burgers and Ice Cream. One of the reasons why I really wanted to record on site when I first started doing this 120 episodes ago was because I enjoy going out and photographing assignments, musicians and entertainers and authors and writers and mechanics in their shop, as opposed to doing studio photo work. So I translated it to the same thing. If I want to go talk to these people, I want to be more relaxed. I want to go into their environment. Plus, it's a good excuse to go hang out at a bar, in a restaurant, or a coffee shop. It's more relaxed.
See how that worked? How it all worked together for him? Yeah. It just all came together.
Knowing that I'm not in a controlled atmosphere like you would be in the KQ&A studios, right, or the whoever studios, where you have complete control over sound and atmospheric noise and things. I knew we were going to be picking up the faucets going and the silverware clanking and the other neighboring tables talking. And I like that, kind of the documentary feel about it. So it's not going to be completely perfect audio. Some of my favorite pictures haven't been technically perfect. They might be a little out of focus, a little over, a little underexposed. I'm looking for the story, the emotion, or the feeling to it, rather than the sharp, crisp, clear. Same thing with sound. We're going to have the little glitches. If I can talk to somebody who has an interesting story, like the three of you, I'll include Les in there, I think that supersedes the technical aspect. That's more engaging. I have listened to podcasts and listened to interviews that are, you know, the host will start out, "Hey, my mic was off, but it was such a good interview." You know, something technically was wrong, but it was such a good interview, I wanted to put it out anyway. I just crank up the volume a little bit, or I pay a little more attention because I want to hear that story. And that's kind of the same thing that I'm catching from you. Technically, you may not have the Don Pardo radio voice, but what you're bringing is these decades of experience, these stories that you're going to tell, the people you're going to sit down and talk with. And after 30 seconds, if somebody's not going to get that and they're just thinking, "Boy, this guy talks slow," then you know what? Do you want that person as a listener? I don't want somebody to listen to my podcast going, "Boy, that gain was a little off the mic. I was, you know, the silverware in the background." So, you know, if that's the case, don't listen to it. I want you to listen to the people I'm talking with.
There are plenty of commercially slick things to listen to, but what you're talking about is raw heart.
Yeah.
And something that I've always, one of the reasons I fell in love with Scott is that he doesn't play the victim card. I mean, I didn't even know about his Parkinson's for a while. I thought that, you know, he had something, but it was never who he is. It's not his defining identity of who he is. He's a storyteller, and that's why people are going to listen to his podcast.
Well, let's talk a little bit more in depth on the podcast. What are some of the topics that you've gone through? I'm just starting it, and I want to finish your emergency one. But talk about some of your goals. Why you're doing it? What do you want to accomplish with it? Where do you want to go with this?
Well, to be totally honest, I didn't know what my goal was at first. I just felt like it was something that I could do. But after Rhonda and I talked about it in depth, I realized that people with Parkinson's or any other disability, for lack of a better word, could listen to it and think, you know, if he can do this, maybe I can do something too. And it takes guts to put yourself out there when you sound like I do. But so far I've had pretty good feedback, and as you say, if they're going to have a problem with my voice, well, then they don't have to listen, you know.
Yeah. I like to tell people I have the perfect face for radio and the great voice for print. But what are some of the topics that you've hit?
Well, I mean, I started with Parkinson's because I wanted people to know why I sound the way I do and why I'm doing the podcast. And I've started to go through my childhood with Christmas, with actual Santa Clauses coming to the house, why I got involved in TV news with Jerry Foster. I did a show that you haven't finished on, the TV show Emergency. So I'm doing, and of course, helicopters, TV news helicopters. And because of Jerry Foster, that's what I wanted to do when I grew up. I got to do it for a very, very brief time before the Parkinson's diagnosis. So I have some stories that have come out of that. And I'm trying to... It sounds kind of hokey, but I'm trying to entertain and inspire. And by inspire, I just mean this is me, and if I can do it, you can probably do it too.
Very nice, very nice. Now, going forward, what do you got planned? You got anything? And let me ask, on a technical aspect, just I'm curious how you go about doing it. You record in your home studio for the most part?
Yeah.
Okay. How are you doing it? Equipment-wise, what do you got going?
Well, first of all, my microphone, which I have replaced. I've replaced a Radio Shack microphone with this one, is a $10 knockoff of a Shure SM58.
Those are awesome.
That's what these
They're
are.
They're awesome.
These are upgraded, though. These are awesome. $18 knockoffs of the...
They are these. That is like, that is the biggest, that is right now the biggest, you just let the secret out. Like, that's the biggest thing right now is that, like, you can buy those things. They sound great, work fine, are just as good. You know, well done.
Well, I ordered it because it was cheap. I gave it a try, and I said, my gosh, this makes me sound pretty good. All right.
Let's help me navigate through there. And like I had mentioned before, I reached out to a couple of the podcast folks that I listen to and then ran it through some of the local music and sound guys when I was starting out. And those SM58s are the industry standard for musicians and performers because they can take a beating. Now, these that we're using now are little $18, $20 knockoffs of those. I think there might be... Yeah, no, mine's the SM58. I do have a couple of them that I picked up used.
The ones that if you take these, most of them, if you take them apart, the capsules are good. They're just as sturdy for the most part. I mean... And for, you know, are you kidding me? For $10,
you
can replace that all day.
Yeah, the SMs are $100. So I figured if I get 2 or 3 years out of them,
exactly.
I'd made my. But when I bought the first set of two and used them and did that, I took them apart a little bit to look at the wirings. I immediately went out and bought several more just so I have them for when I'm doing panel shows and things. But if you don't, you know, if you're not spinning them around like Roger Daltrey or, you know,
or
Mick Jagger.
Or the infamous mic drop.
Yeah. We never say anything profound enough to warrant a mic drop on this show.
That's probably good.
They're on these stands, you know. You can't drop. You knock it over. It's not.
I do without the stands every once in a while, but I get to talking with my hands so much. This is a whole lot easier, and I don't have to worry about it. I can talk freely. What are you recording on? You doing it through the computer direct?
Yeah, Audacity, free software. Yep. I've got a bunch of add-on plugins and a Behringer 3-channel mixer.
Nice. Now, we're just talking about that today, a Behringer mixer that I had borrowed from Teddy Leonard, former guest of this show. And somebody offered me one, and we were debating whether I needed it or not.
I didn't debate. I told you take the money. Take the money and wait, like save it up. Yeah, like they get something with more channels. Good
so, so you're running your mics through the board and then the board into your computer?
Right, and the reason we do that is because I originally started this whole podcasting thing for Rhonda's podcast.
Yeah.
Which we now have renamed and rebranded as the Rhonda Orr Show. But she wanted to, and we have been able to have Skype or phone interviews because we have boards so we can put them right in. And once I started, I just added a few extra pieces of equipment. One thing I had always wanted to add for Rhonda was I'm not sure what you would call one of the overhead mic stands.
Yeah, the little boom arm.
Because she talks with her hands also. And every now and then you get the bumping of the mic or whatever.
You know what I've used, because sometimes I'll have my computer set up, or we'll be eating. You can go back and listen to the Decker episode from Mainstage where we sat and chewed in the microphone. But no, sometimes I'll have the laptop up when we're on location so I can pull up info or even just papers. I got a couple of those. I think they're set up for drummers where it's like a little boom stand on this.
Yeah.
And it sets far enough away so you have some hand room, and those come in handy a lot. I like those, and they're $12 or something, And you don't have to clamp it to a table.
That's true.
I'm fortunate enough with this Zoom recorder. It's kind of a built-in little mixer. You can use it as an interface going directly into the computer as well, but it just saves on a little SD card. And it's really portable. Today we've got a lot of extra junk just for the headphones and that. But if you wanted to strip it down, this and a couple of mics and cords, and you're raring to go. We've recorded them in the car, driving to places and stuff. It's really nice to just drop it in a bag. I didn't want to be tied down to a board and a computer and that, because my whole goal was to get out into the field.
Well, my goal was not that. Yeah. More importantly, in my case, I have to edit the show heavily because I have to stop. I'm out of air. You know, things like that require editing to get rid of the pauses that would just be interminable.
Yeah.
So it's already quiet, and I'm in the home studio, and it works real well.
You can do your chopping up there, and
right now I found with Rhonda, she wanted some edits made to her stuff, but really I felt like her stuff was so good coming straight into the mix that I didn't really want to edit it. You know, she said, but I paused. Yeah, but a pause is not a problem.
Yeah,
you know, and so. With her stuff, we just go straight through and do very little editing. We drop the open and the close on, and that's about it.
I only have to edit hard when it's Les and Matt Hinshaw on the show. I keep it as...
No. It's not just me. There are many other people.
I keep it as radio-friendly as possible. I don't, because I'm not always in bar. I mean, like today, we're at a restaurant, coffee shop and things. And one of the first questions when I approach managers or restaurant owners about, hey, we want to come in and record, one of the first questions, first they hear podcast, and for the most part, there's really no FCC guidelines. You can say whatever you want, and
anything you want.
And their first question, well, do I have to separate you? Do I got to put you in another room? And I said, no. Most of the time, I've got my son with me, so we try and keep it as language friendly as possible, so that we can. And then I don't have to say, okay, yeah, if you want to listen, go to episode 8, 12, and 22. The other ones are pretty solid. I like to keep it as clean as possible. I knew that wasn't going to be a problem with you guys, so we didn't even bring it up. Unfortunately, some people.
See, the thing is that Matt thinks that they want to separate him from the rest of the crowd, you know, their customers because of language. It's not that. I'm not going to go into what it is. I'm just going
to
say.
But I like it to be as, with my show, as family friendly as possible, just so, you know, if we're at a restaurant, the kids can sit here too, and I'll grab my kid and put him on mic every once in a while.
Well, so. I think my stories go along those lines also. I don't think I've done anything yet that family shouldn't hear.
So what do you got on the horizon for as far as topics and folks and guests and things? Anything that you want to divulge, or you just want them to tune in?
Oh, no, I'll be happy to tell you that there's the time I raised goats and sheep on a ranch in New York State.
So you didn't have to use a lawnmower.
It's true.
Fertilizer.
Or bike sweaters.
I'm just saying.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
I plan to do more about TV news. I just dropped a podcast this week on my brain surgery, the first one. There were two more, so I'll be doing those also.
And I noticed through your postings and on your blog, you include a lot of photographs and things in there. So it really gets people to, you know, it helps people to get to know you and your topic better. So I like that, too.
Well, I'm trying to get them to want to listen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if they know me, that's one thing. And I've had several friends say, hey, it's pretty good. But I'm looking for the people who don't yet know me and want to try to drag them into the tent so that they'll listen also.
Is there a specific day that you target to drop on a schedule, or is it as you can get them done?
It has been as I can get them done. I mean, the end of my podcast, the voiceover guy says the show's produced whenever Scott feels like it. But I'm trying to aim for Tuesdays because it seems like a day that more people will catch it.
Nice. Well, I think we've covered a lot. Anything else you want to drop in? I want to let folks, again, know where to reach out. Rhonda, where can they get you?
RhondaStopBullying.org or email me at Rhonda@RhondaStopBullying.org. 1S. Telephone number 928-515-9996.
Great. Scott, where can they reach you?
They can find everything they need, including the podcast and the blog at ScottCenter.net.
Great. Les.
And I'm still just on Facebook because it's better for everybody. Leslie Earl Lyman on Facebook.
And I'll put links to there. Hey, I want to thank you for taking the time and sitting down. I know I had reached out. I sent you some emails before, and with everybody scheduling that and with the crossing of media, I know that sometimes that's difficult. So I'm glad we were able to finally sit down and chat, because I know you got a lot of stories to tell, and I'm looking forward to hearing more of them on Scott Center. So
thanks again.
Thank you very much.
And one thing I'll shoot him an
it's
email.
It's like Columbo, isn't he? It's like, okay, now we're done. No, wait.
One more thing.
Yeah.
I had tagged you on a post recently. There's a new friend of mine who's a nationally and internationally touring comic, Steve Simone, who does a really good podcast called The Good Times Show, where the whole gist of it is reminiscing about the good life as a teen and a preteen, where he grew up, and he swaps stories with other comics on just growing up and having fun and good memories. He's been on this show a couple of times, and real good guy based out of the Comedy Store in Los Angeles. Him and Steve Byrne, if you know Steve Byrne, the comic, they got together and did a. It was the same day we did that Star Wars one. Was it December 11th or 10th?
It was. It was pretty close. It was before it came out.
Yeah, no, they were doing it that day. They
Wait,
were doing
it?
That,
really?
And they did a Facebook Live anti-bullying, like an hour-long thing. Mm. Three or four comics sitting together, but it was Steve Byrne and Steve Simone who kind of got this going, and they're going to start doing it on a regular basis as they go. There was a couple of big national stories that broke of some tragic circumstances revolved around bullying. And when they put it up, I tagged you on that. I remember doing that. I didn't get a chance because we were preparing for that podcast we did. It was the same day. But I'm going to look out for more events that they're going to be doing. And Steve performs pretty regularly in Phoenix. So maybe we can do a little cross-promoting next time he's around. I got to reach out to him again.
Thank you. And
let's say that. You can get Steve's latest CD, What's Up, Nerds, that I got a chance to record for him at the Comedy Store in La Jolla, California, right outside of San Diego. You can get that on Amazon. by using the Amazon link at milehighshow.com.
Isn't and give that us a convenient?
Matt Santos, much more interesting than you thought.
But
King Steve, of all media.
Steve Simone's.
Bump me, man. That was awesome. Bump me.
Steve Simone's CD, What's Up, Nerds, you can get also at his website, awesomesteve.com. And if you get
That's
a chance to,
website,
yeah,
awesome
you got, if you get a
and
chance
I
to,
thought Scott Sutton might be seen as being a little too self-indulgent.
No, he is such a great guy and very self-deprecating, and that is very tongue-in-cheek. He's a really, really solid guy and a really good guy. We're trying to work a way for him to come up to Prescott and do a comedy show. I'm in talks with a couple of folks to do that, but he tours all over the country, headlines all over the country, and goes overseas to entertain the troops on a regular basis, and a big organizer for a regularheroes.org, and I'll put a link up to there where they do fundraising for a lot of families and kids that are unfortunately in hospitals and in cancer wards throughout the country. So Steve's a good guy. We've had that's enough plugs for Steve though. I remember when that live Facebook live broadcast they were doing, I specifically thought of you guys because of the theme of it, and hopefully they'll be doing more of those in the future. So anywho, episode 121 is wrapped up here, and I want to thank Rhonda and Scott Orr and Leslie Earl Lyman for sitting in.
You forgot and, the serial and, yeah, killer.
He's been a nice guy.
Thank you, Matt.
And check out scottcenter.net.
Who knows what I'll talk about
right.
next.
Good deal. Check it out. Links are right there on milehighshow.com. Thanks for tuning in. She can tell you about the place.